I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to The Back Half, the New Statesman's culture podcast with me, Tom.
And me, Kate.
We're going to talk at roughly twice the usual speed today.
Yes.
Because
I've got to go get a Eurostar to go to Euro Disney.
Eurostar, straight to Euro Disney.
Straight to the park
in a few minutes. Your first visit?
No, my third, I think. Just keep coming back. I'm not quite sure why I'm doing it this time. I'm not going my own.
Did you go?
Do you think anyone's ever gone on their own?
I expect so. I mean, Disney sort of inspires weird fandom, doesn't it? There's probably a documentary on Netflix somewhere about people who go on an annual pilgrimage to Disneyland.
There'll be somebody
who go every month.
Yeah, there'll be somebody who's heard that they put a new doll in the Small World ride. They just want to go and look at that and try and identify it, even though it's tiny and miniature and up in the corner of one of the rooms.
Did you go as a child?
No, I started going at the age of about 25. But when I was younger, I was able to do the Space Mountain repeatedly. And now my sort of various things have changed, like probably my ear canals and things like that. So I can't really do that because I feel I'm going to have my neck broken when I get thrown around that. But I do like the kind of loosely Indiana Jones sort of runaway mine train type rides where you can keep your eyes open and you can still experience a roller coaster with your eyes open because they don't go upside down and things like that. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Great. Well, report back next time, please.
Yeah. Any changes?
Today we're going to be talking very quickly about the new John Grant album. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about a new Netflix original series called Maniac. And you've got a non-anniversary for us.
I have.
So, Kate, John Grant is just about to release his fourth album, Love is Magic. Maybe before we bang on about it, we should just hear a little bit of it.
Yes.
You think?
This song is called Is He Strange? And we believe it's also a single.
So, Kate, that actually sounds quite like old John Grant to me. It's like kind of quite 70s Carpenters, Elton John type thing.
Classic songwriting, lush John Grant.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily the sort of dominant mode of the album. How would you describe it? It's doing something a little bit different, this record.
It's a strange that when you first put it on, I mean, I didn't know what to think of it at first. I thought, it's all spoken word with synthesizers. And it's not at all. But for some reason, the way it met my ears was as spoken word with synths. Most of the tracks are about 6 minutes long. And they are sort of full of strange sections and spacey synth breaks and kind of juxtaposition of his usual deadpan humour with very, very sort of dark, meaningful moments and stuff. And I just found it very strange. And then the second time I listened to it, it's got all the classic John Grant structures that you got on Queen of Denmark. And you've had ever since Queen of Denmark, but it's just in a different landscape. It just, he's been, I think it was about when he was about 43, he went to Iceland Airwaves and had this kind of, you know, huge conversion when he met all these synth experts and started being able to actually use the electronics he'd always been interested in, but he didn't know how to play. And this is kind of an elaboration of that sort of journey in a way. This has got a million, I think he recorded it with a guy called Ben Edwards, who's a sort of analog synth expert, right, called Benj in Cornwall, who has at least 50 analog synths. And he just went down there and just went mad, basically.
This is all real boys toys, yeah, stuff, isn't it? But it does have a really interesting sound. Like, I mean, sometimes with synth stuff, you just feel that's a sort of keyboard preset made to sound a bit old. And this kind of has, it veers from sort of quite lush moon safari air type stuff to kind of, there's a couple of things there that remind me of like the music from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a song about playing in an arcade, which I thought would have been perfect in the Stranger Things soundtrack, Tempest.
Yeah.
Come play Tempest with me, or maybe Millipede.
Yeah, this is like this is part of his sort of psyche in a way that you heard back in Queen of Denmark as well. I kind of feel like part of his early childhood, because John Grant, he had a very difficult story. So he's brought up extreme Methodist family, wasn't able to be gay, basically became marginally more comfortable with his homosexuality in his 20s. Became a heroin addict, nearly lost his life and his career, and then was literally taken up by the band Midlake, and they produced his first album. So he came to fame at 42, which is kind of unusual. Mm. He's now 50. But there's this area of his songwriting which is very nostalgic and fuzzy and beautiful and magical, and it's sort of pre-adolescence memories. So you hear a lot on Queen of Denmark, this sort of the feel of almost, Space Raider pajamas and Doctor Who and that kind of feel to it, where that might be where he's sort of got a lot of his comfort and ideas as a kid, and then life got more difficult. So I think Tempest is another one of those songs. It's about playing those old retro computer games and stuff.
Yeah, you're totally right about that. He did an interview with The Guardian recently, and they were talking about the sort of playfulness in the record, and he said it was difficult to make, but the most joyous time in my life, up there with Christmases with dinosaur models and snow.
Aww,
so like,
sweet.
Obviously a part of his self resides in this sort of pre-adolescent kind of world. Of
maybe before things got difficult and contentious.
Yeah.
And,
so famously, he revealed that he was HIV positive on stage in the middle of a show, I think it was, a few years ago.
I interviewed him about 2010, right, and he said then that he used sex as Russian roulette. He deliberately slept with people who he knew had HIV as part of this sort of self-destructive, strange, you know, I mean, extremely intense kind of character, obviously. And then when the second album came out, I think it was, that's when he'd had the HIV diagnosis. So maybe he even knew at that point.
Mm.
But I mean, he's a fascinating character, because he then went to work in New York as an interpreter. He speaks like five or six languages, and worked in a local hospital as, I think, a Russian and French interpreter or something like that in New York. So he always manages to offset these very dark moments with a sort of sense of wonder about daily life and the world, which is why you also, in his love songwriting, you get these pictures of these horribly vain, damaging men that he's been involved with, and then you get these moments of like absolute ecstasy and adoration of another character or something. And he just seems to be able to do those like one track after the next.
What was he like when you interviewed him? Was he kind of thoughtful or acerbic?
He's like a sort of over energetic bear. He was so lovely. He didn't stop talking. I had like 2.5 hours with him, and then I saw him on stage at Wilton's Music Hall a few years ago, and he seemed to be quite in quite a sort of dark place that day. And, you know, he was sitting there at his Nord synthesizer, and I don't know, I think he's kind of quite tempestuous in his emotions and stuff. But you definitely get a sense of that on this record. You know, there's the opening track, Metamorphosis, it has a line that goes, 14-year-old boy rapes 80-year-old man. And that's like one of his like gags. And then later on, it breaks out into this beautiful Cocteau Twinsy thing. And it has a line, they took her in an ambulance and that is where she died. And you think, how can you know, that's just an amazing sort of offset of humour and these very mysterious kind of dark moments.
It's really that song, and perhaps this is the, when we get to it, perhaps this is our link with Maniac, but that song really does feel like opening up a little trapdoor in someone's head, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's how he's described it, that you've got this sort of And that's why it's very off, almost off-putting as the first track, because you've got all these sort of weird, horrific headlines of boys raping old men and all this kind of stuff. And I think he's just trying to capture the sort of swirl of stuff that goes around in his head average day. And there is some really, there's some quite harsh acerbic stuff in here, isn't there? I mean, am I allowed to use Anglo-Saxon English in this? I mean, his song about Trump is called Smug Cunt. and then he's got another song called Preppy Boy, which is again a bit of a simultaneously a takedown and a sort of love letter to these horrible kind of smooth preppy kids, I guess, who he would have known at kind of college age. And then by this time in the album you've sort of got into it, I think, but Diet Gum is this sort of
very funny.
It's very funny, isn't it? It's like it's a dialogue between lovers, I think, just tearing each other apart. I love this. Do you even know where this cheese is made? It's from Iowa, you dullard. Ever heard of it?
I know. Do you even know what a collective noun is, stupidzilla? A patheticness of fuckwits. You come round here with your lips flapping all hopped up on diet gum. And then I think I heard this line, that's why you just took a poo in those slacks you're wearing. that's basically being with a really controlling, horrible partner, I think.
Yeah. It kind of like, in an auditory way, it sort of sounds like a cross between like LCD Sound System and one of the sort of comedy songs that Adam Buxton makes up for his podcast.
That smirk on your face was designed by me. I fucking curated it like magically. and then the album ends with Touch and Go, which is his tribute to Chelsea Manning, the WikiLeaks whistleblower who transitioned in prison.
In prison, yeah.
And it's just deeply moving. It has the line, you know, what was going through your head as they struck you down to the ground? And it's sort of, again, we're back to the part in Metamorphosis with the woman in the ambulance. You just have this sort of, you can let these lines through that are so, they just hang there with all this suggestion, so pregnant with imagery and meaning. And this with these beautifully lush tunes that he just is going to presumably keep writing. I mean, his structures still sound like, you know, sort of the Carpenters type stuff or the Rufus Wainwright incarnation of 70s sort of songwriting. And it doesn't matter what sort of backdrop he puts them on. But I mean, it's a formula that presumably, it's been nice watching him like develop in plain sight as well, going through the rock sound that Midlake gave him and then finding this sort of more spectral electronic-y stuff that obviously just hit him. I've always loved this stuff. This is what I wanted to do.
Well, when I heard him in conversation with Tracy Thorne. I mean, he was interviewing Tracy Thorne, really, at Rough Trade when her record came out earlier this year. And when they started talking about music that had influenced them at an early age, I mean, all his reference points were like ABBA and like MOR rock, like Boston and stuff like that. Although he's sort of come from this indie place, obviously his, really it's a pop, you know, his soul is pop. And actually, you know, I don't know, maybe this is really unfair and they've probably done some good stuff, but I always found Midlake spectacularly dull. Poor Midlake. I mean, brilliant that they've enabled John Grant's career, but he's gone somewhere so much more interesting than what they were doing.
He was interviewed about the synths on the album and he says he has a Moog 3 and he has an exquisite ARP2500 modular synth, which is a truly beautiful thing to behold and hear. And my favourite quote about his synths is, a Prophet T8, which makes a sound creamier than Cornish Clotted and Devonshire Double Cream combined. Because obviously he's been down in Cornwall doing this. So again, he's one of these like men, you know, international men who just like goes around and absorbs wherever he is. So Cornish Clotted Cream can be heard in the Prophet T8.
As you're talking about dairy, can I just make one more observation about this album? Is the unnatural number of references to cheese in it. So I mentioned one of them, Do You Even Know Where This Cheese Is Made? It's from Iowa, you dullard. In the first track, he mentions broccoli with cheese sauce. Then in this song about sort of Me Too type creepy character, he says he's serving cheese fondue on the polar bear rug, which makes me think of which makes me think of sort of Will Ferrell in Anchorman.
Yeah, I just think.
And then Is He Strange, that rather lovely, lush song has a completely elliptical reference to brown Norwegian cheese, which I have no idea what the significance of that is. But
So basically, don't be put off by its strange 6-minute synth interludes and just listen for the John Grant songs within, we would say. Wouldn't we? I'm putting words in your mouth there.
You can put them in my mouth. Yeah, that's fine. So Love is Magic by John Grant. It's on Bella Union on the 12th. Yeah.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've been watching the first few episodes of a new Netflix original. I don't know why I keep saying Netflix original. I'm sort of like...
They're, like we're advertising.
Their branding has really worked on me. New Netflix original series, Maniac, which is a remake of... you're right there.
Not a Netflix original then, is it?
I guess not.
I mean, I'm just looking for my notes.
To the extent...
Oh, there we go. Go on.
Kate's firing papers around the podcast room.
At least we prepare.
Yeah.
Evidence that we prepare.
This is evidence-based podcasting. I mean, to what extent is any Netflix original? This is what I was thinking about the other day. I mean, however, even the best new Netflix stuff, and this is true of kind of Stranger Things and lots of other things, it's all a sort of amalgam of lots of other stuff that you kind of like and has been good before.
And the difference is it's very long running. and structureless.
So this is actually a remake of a 2014 Norwegian TV series of the same name. The original is about a guy staying in a mental facility, and it goes through lots of sort of fictional versions of himself. So he's having these fantasies. He's in a kind of Lord of the Rings style adventure, or he's on an American football team. So they've just taken the very, very basic premise of that and taken it in a much more kind of convoluted, zany, Wes Anderson style direction. So we're it's kind of like a futuristic 80s, would you describe it as?
And it's like being in a dream. There's a bit of kind of the feel of Vanilla Sky. There's a bit of Her, especially in the idea of this. I was going to say it started off for me with me looking at the main actor and thinking, looks an awful lot like Jonah Hill, but it's far too thin. So maybe it's Jonah Hill's brother. And I just went off on one thinking, you know, and then I realized it's just Jonah Hill.
He's lost loads
and loads of weight. And I looked up about his weight loss, and there were lots of speculation as to how he did this and stuff. And he's quoted as saying that he went to a dietitian and he changed what he ate.
Amazing.
Lost some weight as a result.
Good on you, Jonah Hill. It works for this, actually, because he looks quite sort of haunted and emaciated is the wrong word, but he looks like someone who's just lost a lot of weight, doesn't he? So he plays the central character, who is delusional, has had a psychotic episode in his past. It feels like he's being sent messages about a pattern in the universe and his role. He's going to have a role to save the world. Various people that he encounters are going to pass him on messages in this role. And then Emma Stone plays another very disturbed character who has had a traumatic episode in her past, is also searching for some sort of meaning. They come together in as they both sign up for a pharmaceutical trial, which allows them to put them together in this weird, like, I guess this is the kind of Wes Anderson style setting of kind of very eccentric scientists. Mm. As I say, it's a kind of very 80s vision of the future. So everyone's got these sort of like, do you remember those Acorn computers? Did you have those at school? Like BBC Acorn, like giant terminals. So they're able to have kind of virtual reality sex, but they've only got Acorn computers. And they've got sort of like really crap versions of Star Wars droids that go around doing pooper scoop duties, like neutralizing dog poo on the streets.
And the premise is they're taking a drug, aren't they? Yes. Which will eliminate all previous pain and trauma from their lives. And they're basically hooked up to a giant computer, and then they re-experience those traumas. And then this is where the action begins, because they're essentially, they start to interact with one another's dreams. And then that's where these sort of fantastical versions of themselves and their alter egos take place. And it reminded me, I've only seen the first three episodes, 10 of them. And the structures are, they fluctuate, don't they? So some of the episodes apparently are like 20 something minutes, and some of them are 45, which reminded me of Atlanta.
Mm.
And the idea that they're messing about with genre within this thing as well, because in Atlanta, about sort of six or seven episodes in, that's the Childish Gambino thing. Suddenly, you know, you're in a kind of mock-up TV studio with an imaginary channel. And it's funny that they, because these things are sort of dumped on your computer in one go by Netflix, and they're technically sort of free because you don't really pay for it, they can really mess about with that idea of your expectations in terms of narrative and even the length of the actual shows themselves.
Mm, mm. Yeah, it kind of, it has that slight anthology feel in that, you know, there is obviously a central thread throughout it, but they're going to take maximum liberties with that. They're going to pull it in all sorts of different directions. I know we're only a few episodes in, but does it work for you? Are you going to come back to it?
To me, I find the sort of changes of tone slightly sort of irritating, because there's, particularly in the Emma Stone character, there's a great trauma revealed very early on in her past. And then at the same time, you have, you know, the jokes being made by a kind of computerized koala playing chess in the park, which reminded me a little bit of the kind of the terrible anthropomorphized computer in Interstellar called TARS, which is that weird thing that looks like a cross between a cigarette packet and a Rubik's Cube, which kind of walks around and tells jokes. They just sometimes with these things, you feel like the directors, once they've settled on this sci-fi world, they just start to experiment with the hilarious things that you could have within that landscape and stuff. And that's why you get these, you know, kind of slightly quirky little moments that seem to steal your attention, and you want to know more about those two characters and how they're going to intersect.
Well, the two core performances are really strong, I think. Emma Stone is kind of mesmerizing. She's got such a fierce face in this. She's so sort of,
she doesn't let up.
No,
does she?
She's so she does very well that kind of abrasive, angry fuck you attitude, which is obviously masking a deep, deep trauma, but she pulls that off brilliantly, I think. And Jonah Hill really works as this kind of dazed and confused character who's been sidelined his whole life by his very wealthy, successful family.
He's not even painted in the family portrait. It's brilliant. There's a perfect modern portrait of these four or five perfect boys and the parents, and then there's a photograph of him stuck on the side.
They're like, they're going to paint me in, he keeps saying.
Because actually, the drama is the family situations of these two characters.
Yes.
In a sense, that's where the kind of the tension and the pain is in it, and then the rest of it just seems to me so far to be sort of slightly messing about with funny sci-fi ideas.
I must admit, I do like some of that, and when they do it well, it is really enjoyable. So, for instance, when they're preparing themselves for this pharmaceutical trial, there's like a five-minute video, which feels like the sort of science videos that you used to watch at school. Probably when I was watching them, they were already like 15 years out of date, you know, very like basic Tomorrow's World-y graphics and talking heads of these kind of scientists preparing the people for their experience. And then like weird glimpses, like Emma Stone goes into a shop and like this door opens and you just glimpse like a dozen people like rooting through bins full of shredded paper and they're kind of like, they're tracing different people's identities. But I agree that the koala was perhaps a
I like to when they arrive at the drug trial place and they're all given these different pods to sleep in. And the voiceover, this moronic voiceover, reminds me of when you're on the London Underground and for some reason the driver's bored and he goes like, stand away from the doors, please. And he keeps repeating it. And the guy who's doing the pod announcement goes, if you are having trouble getting into your pod, there is a ladder underneath which will help you access your pod. Please get inside your pod and change your clothes inside your pod. Yes. It's just going on in the background.
Banal. Totally banal, yeah.
That feels like real life to me.
We should just say that it's directed by Kori Joji Fukunaga, who is the next James Bond director.
Yes, and did the first season of True Detective, I think.
Yeah. So since Danny Boyle pulled out, it's up to Fukunaga to take over. So Maniac is on Netflix. All 10 episodes of the first season are there. Kate, you've got on anniversary this week. What is it?
Well, obviously, the further you get from an era in music, the more hallowed it appears. And I was reminded a little bit of this with John Grant, because I think that when John Grant emerged, that was like one of the best periods in music, which of course it wasn't. He was one of the only good things in like 2010. Janelle Monáe, likewise, around the same time. And the other thing was Fuck You by CeeLo Green, which was a number one single 8 years ago today. For 2 weeks and sold somewhere in the region of 180,000 copies in the UK, which I can't even believe. Because how does that work? I mean, people didn't buy things then. But yeah, so we revisited Fuck You. We'd sort of forgotten all about it, hadn't we?
Yeah, I haven't heard this song for ages. Weirdly, sort of, I guess, maybe because of the language in it, although they did do a cleaned up radio version, which was Forget You.
I saw him singing it in Jules Holland in the early evening performance and the late evening performance, and he had to do two different versions in the studio. So he did Forget You and Fuck You, and then they just played one after The Watershed. And it's a beautiful Motown song, co-written, I find out, by Bruno Mars, which makes sense because it sounds like the Lazy Song or something.
Was Bruno Mars big by then? I guess he was.
Not really, no. Was he not? No. He was obviously kind of oiling his way up the pole by that point.
Is that a period kind of, I feel like, Bruno Mars in the Ascendancy, Mark Ronson, CeeLo Green,
poster,
Janelle Monáe,
post Gnarls Barkley.
Yeah, kind of so there's like kind of good soul, you know, a little soul revival.
Yeah,
going
a lot
on.
Of Motowny kind of solid songwriting, and it was great. And somebody described it as essentially a middle finger extending from the fist of a pop single.
You wish you'd written that, don't you? That's
blows off the tongue, that description, doesn't it?
Well, rewatching the video, it's nice because it turns it into a sort of playground song, basically, because it's about this kind of. It starts with CeeLo as a very small boy, and I'd forgotten that it has lyrics like, "I guess he's an Xbox and I'm more Atari."
Yeah, see, they were already doing that retro game thing then.
Which ties back to John Grant, and his arcade game,
and his Tempest.
That's probably a good point to leave it at. So, happy 8th. Anniversary to CeeLo Green's Fuck You. Thank you for downloading this episode of The Back Half. We've been Tom and Kate. Thank you to Caroline Crampton for editing us. You can rate us on iTunes. Please do leave a review or a star rating. Get in touch if you have any non-anniversary suggestions on Twitter or thebackhalfpodcast@gmail.com. And Kate, we're going to leave them with
the hit song Godspeed by Pistol Jazz.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.